X's and O's versus Jimmy's and Joe's. Michael, is high school recruiting still the king of college football? With the recent JUCO ruling and the portal becoming mainstream now, it seems like some people believe that it is not. But we're going to go through some stuff today that shows why high school recruiting is still the lifeblood of college football. If you want to compete for championships year in and year out, where Florida State is at with high school recruiting and where they need to go to get back to competing for championships consistently. What's up, Noel Nation and college football fans? Thank you for joining us. I think this is going to be an episode that you guys are going to enjoy no matter who you're a fan of. But of course, because we cover Florida State, we're going to tie it back to the Seminoles in kind of a forensic accountant type of, you know, we do this kind of nerd out stuff every now and then on the show. And really, guys, to be honest, we are somewhere between conference realignment and the portal session and spring practice. There is nothing going on with football. So we have done some digging to find something to bring you about football talk. So I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. Also, Michael, could Florida State have the best offense in the country in 2025? I don't know, but we got some thoughts on that as well based on some recent comments by an FSU player here. Got some baseball talk as this is the last non-conference weekend of the season. And then Florida State may just have a new basketball coach is the word on the street. So we went from having nothing to a jam-packed episode for you guys. So again, thanks for joining us. But before we jump into that, Michael, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm good, Jesse. Good to be here. Yeah, I mean, we're going to do a little bit of forensic accounting, maybe a little bit of CSI crime scene on FSU's, you know, recruiting efforts. But, you know, this will be good. If you're a college football fan or you're a Florida State fan and you're just jonesing like we are for content around Florida State football, this is going to be the episode for you.
Yeah, definitely, because there's going to be a lot of national talk when you talk about the teams that make the playoffs and all this type of stuff and where they're at in recruiting. But of course, like we said, we're going to tie it back to Florida State and make it relevant to there. And so before we get into that, first, I want to bring you a quick word from a new sponsor that we have. Actually, they're an old sponsor, but we are glad to be kind of rekindling the relationship there. And that is with Roback. Now, Roback has some top quality merchandise here. I have a hoodie from Roback. It is my go-to hoodie. They have recently released some new Florida State stuff. They got a polo with Doak on it. They have some Florida State hoodies that you may or may not have seen Jameis wear as well. So top quality stuff. Make sure you check them out and save 20% on your first order with code SPEAR. So thank you for supporting those that support us. Now, Michael, let's jump into this. Where this conversation started was you sent me something that you saw on Twitter or X, whichever you call it, the other day that was put out by On3 about the amount of 5-stars that have been signed in the CFP era. And so really it kind of created a thought exercise to go down the recruiting rabbit hole. And so let me throw that up on the screen. And for those of you watching on YouTube, we have slides to kind of make the data easy to follow along with for those watching. And because we have audio only podcast listeners, we're going to make it all make sense for you guys. We're going to make it flow nice and smooth. So don't worry about that a bit. So let's throw this up on the screen to start with. And this is a graphic that was put out by On3 for the number of 5-stars signed in the CFP era, which is from 2014 to 2025. Now, obviously, we know the 2025 can't equate to on the field yet because that season has not been played. But I think there are some very interesting takeaways when you look at this graphic, especially when you start to read down the list of names. So, of course, number one with the most 5-star signed is Alabama with 55. That is just a ridiculous number. Georgia comes in at number two with 49. Ohio State, number three with 33. Clemson is number four with 28. Texas with 23. And Texas A&M are tied. LSU comes in next at with 19 5-stars. Then you have USC with 18, Michigan with 14. Florida State is on this list, even though most of our 5-stars were signed in the early part of the CFP era with 13 there, and then Oregon at 11th. And that rounds out this list here. But, you know, when we were talking about this list, what is interesting about the names on this list and why it's relevant to being able to compete based on what you do from a recruiting standpoint is in the CFP era, there have been 6 teams to win a national title. Well, Michael, all 6 of those teams are on this list.
Yep.
And every team that has won multiple national titles is right here in the top 4: Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Clemson. So really, I mean, that tells you right there. Now, it does run deeper than 5-stars. Like, there is still the blue chip standard, you know, which is where teams that have less than a 50% blue chip ratio have not won a title in about 10 plus years. That still holds true to this day. Yeah. But you can see the immediate part of this graphic shows that, man, if you're going to compete consistently for championships, because even with some of the names on that list, even though they may not have won championships, you know, to put it back up there, Clemson is still a team that has made the playoffs, but maybe not won every year. Yeah. Texas is another team that's made the playoffs a couple times. Ohio State has made it and not won a few times. So
right. It
really shows that you got to be raking in that talent. And we're going to go much deeper into these numbers here. If you want to compete consistently, you got to be raking in that talent.
Absolutely. At the foundation of an elite program is talent acquisition, right? And not just talent acquisition, meaning portal, whatever, but talent acquisition of the best players. You have to win your fair share of recruiting battles over these five-star plus, whatever you want to moniker you want to give these types of elite players. Players that honestly could go into the elite NFL today and be on the 2D. Those are the kind of players you're looking for.
Yeah.
Not the players that are scratching for the practice squads of the NFL, but players that could literally be on the 2D. And you have to try to win your fair share of battles of players who are day one starters in the NFL.
Yeah. And typically when you look at a five-star, that's guys they feel like are going to be starters, first round draft picks and things like that. Now, it's fair to say, and I know some of you are probably thinking right now, like, well, duh, the most talented teams win. Well, yeah, we get that part too. So that's the obvious part of this conversation. But it doesn't always mean you're going to be successful when you rake in talent, a la Texas A&M or Miami of recent over the past 20 years. They've had plenty of talent and really done nothing with it. So it doesn't necessarily mean that. But we're going to have that conversation later here. You know, we've also had the conversation of, can portal-built teams be these contenders? And we've seen some get close, and we're going to talk about that later with Florida State. But still, high school recruiting-built teams are still the standard. And I think the other important aspect here is that, yes, there is a little bit of maybe over-reliance on five stars and the ratings, the star ratings and the recruiting rankings and all that type of stuff. Because honestly, not every five-star is guaranteed to be elite.
Right.
And non-five stars certainly can be. I mean, if you want an example from Florida State, look at Jared Verse, a zero-star who came in and was a first-round NFL draft pick, played like a five-star, and then went on to win the Defensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL versus Marvin Jones Jr., who's a five-star that we just brought in, who was terrible, frankly. I mean, I hate to say it because his father's a legend at Florida State, but it's the truth of the matter.
Right.
We've also seen guys like DeMaurie Tate, you know, not the trash on a kid, but was a five-star recruit, and you got absolutely nothing from him. And so those are things that definitely have to be addressed as well. And now Florida State this is the reason that we also wanted to talk about this was that recruiting has been one of the kind of hot button issues for Florida State throughout Mike Norvell's tenure. You know, they had some tough beginnings, right? And I give them credit. I give them some grace for that, I think is a better word there. I give them grace for that. But even when they had success, the 10-win season, the 13-win season, now then, of course, we know they had a good class for 25 that really fell apart, and they did a good job of picking up the pieces late, but they have not been able to capitalize on that success yet. They have yet to sign a top 10 class under Mike Norvell at Florida State. And so we're going to talk, when we bring this home to Florida State, more about that as well. But so let's paint the picture of where you need to be, more than just signing five stars, because, you know, there's a lot of really good four stars out there too. So the next slide that we're going to throw up here is looking at CFP era national champions from 2014 to 2024, because we have their on-field results to look at. Now, when you go year by year, the way I have this broken down here is the year for the team that won the national championship, the team that won the national championship, and their four-year average high school class rank over their, you know, basically the way I did this was leading up to the point where you won the national championship. How did you build your roster to get there? And you're going to see some common similarities among these names. So in 2014, you had Ohio State won the national championship. And their average recruiting ranking these are high school only now, high school recruiting rankings over that four-year period was fourth. So a top five average over the 4 years leading up to the year they won the title. Alabama was a recruiting powerhouse under Nick Saban. Their average was easy to find because it was 1-1-1 added, divided, one. So it was easy to average. So in 2015, Alabama averaged the number one class every single year before they led up there. Clemson kind of broke the mold here in 2016. They had an average of 13. Now, there's some more points that we're going to make on this in a minute. 2017, Alabama was one. 2018, Clemson again breaks the mold at number 11 with their average. Yep. 2019, LSU was seven, so still top 10. Then you have 2020, Alabama at two. 2021, Georgia at two. 2022, Georgia at three. Then you have another mold breaker here with Michigan in 2023 with a 12th ranked average. But they also had a top 15 transfer class. And I mean, let's be honest, Michael, there are some things that we're going to talk about later in this episode that has to be said when you talk about some of these teams.
Right.
Michigan cheated in 2023.
That's right.
Whether you like it or not, whether you want to admit it or not, they did. And so that helped them be one of those teams that could win without that average. In 2024, of course, the most recent national championship winner, Ohio State, was an average of four top five classes leading up to those years. And they also had a top 10 transfer class going into the season that they won the national title. Now, of course, to tie it back to Florida State, the last team in the BCS era, the last time we won a national championship, Florida State's average was fourth. You know, Jimbo, for everything that he was or wasn't, the man could recruit.
Yes,
and so you look at these numbers. Now, the takeaways of what you need to know from all of these numbers here, I have in this box down here at the bottom. Every single team on this list had at least one top 10 class in the 4 years prior to winning a national title. Every single one of them. Only three out of 11 teams had more than one class ranked out of the top 10 outside of the top 10 in that four-year period. So what that tells you is all of these teams were signing top 10 classes more often than they were not. And only two teams, Clemson and Michigan, won with an average ranking outside of the top 10. And so what I think is interesting, you know, when you look at these numbers, is it tells you where you need to be. It tells you that you need to sign a top 10 class pretty much within a four-year period of when you're going to make a national title run. It also tells you that you need to be signing top 10 classes more often than not. Now, the portal is obviously something that has to be factored into this era. We know Florida State was one of the teams that could have broke the mold as being one of the first portal-built teams to win a national championship. Of course, Jordan Travis got hurt. They got screwed, and it never happened. But that shows you where Florida State needs to be. So when you tie it back to FSU and you look at coming into the 2025 season, Florida State's last four classes are 20, 20, 12, and 19. You are not where you need to be. And so, again, when you look at the teams that consistently compete, that's where they're landing, and that's where Florida State needs to be. So, you know, give me some thoughts on this, Michael. I mean, you can see that obviously when you talk about these teams, you need to be somewhere in that top five to top 10 recruiting average, building your roster up to your run. Now, of course, you know, when you talk about the Clemsons and the Michigans, there's some things there like Clemson did benefit in 2018 from Florida State being down that year. So they really didn't have a big domino standing in their way. They did nail a couple quarterbacks with Deshaun Watson there and Trevor Lawrence. And then, of course, Michigan had a great defense, played a kind of soft schedule for most of the season. And they also had Connor Stallions on staff. So those are some things that really helped them. But more often than not, man, you got to be nailing those top 10 classes.
That's right. Listen, at the end of the day, the formula is simple. It's the same formula that has been around since the advent of college football. The most well-resourced team is going to have the best shot to win a national championship. What do I mean by resources? At the very foundation of those resources has to be getting the elites of the elites talents. Now, you can't get all of them unless you're Jimbo Fisher with unlimited money and do nothing with them. But typically, you can't get all of them. Even Alabama in its heyday with Nick Saban wasn't winning every single elite five-star recruit battles. But you got to win your fair share of them. You got to get those elite things. At the next level of resourcing is evaluation. Because you can go and sign all those five-star recruits, but if you don't evaluate well and more than half of them end up being busts, right, a la a Marvin Jones Jr., right, and you don't have backups for that, you're in a whole lot of trouble. So you have to be able to win your fair share of elite recruiting battles, and you have to be able to evaluate very well. And you look at all of those previous national champions, what did they have, Jesse? They had their fair share of five-star recruiting battle wins, and they were able to evaluate well the right kinds of five-star players they were going after. The right kinds of four-star player. Even the diamond in the rough three-star player that maybe no one caught on, and they end up turning into superstars at their schools. So those three things, winning your fair share of elite battle, and recruiting or evaluating those recruits really well. Those are the two foundational pieces that you see consistent in those champions becoming champions.
Yeah, and I think you could even add a third bullet point there to you have to be able to develop them to be where they want to be, which most of the time a five-star, you just kind of got to stay out of their way because they're going to be pretty good. And I think the reason this is important is because when, like, sometimes you'll see a guy decommit and right. people will be like, well, he didn't want to be at Florida State anyway. I want guys that want to be here. You know, give me a three-star with heart over, you know, the five-star don't matter anyway. It does. The data tells you that it does. And so, I mean, that's why that we're kind of looking at this right now. And that's why, you know, recruiting progress is one of the big things we want to see from the staff coming into this year. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But let's use a more recent example here as well. And just to tie back to one thing that you had told me before the show that I think is very interesting is, you know, when you bring in these high school recruits, It is still from the high school ranks. That's what's right. dominating the success trail. Because I think when you bring in a five-star, and let's just say, you know, you have a Marvin Jones Jr., where there were some red flags that were raised when he came from his time at Georgia to when he came to Florida State. I think when you build from the high school ranks and you're developing these players, you can get a feel for who's going to be a dude for you and who's not. Like, that's you're right. going to say, man, I just don't know if this guy's going to work out. And so you can plan accordingly to either not put him on the field, recruit over him. But if you're building your team out of the portal primarily, your margin for error is so much more slim.
Yep.
Because if that portal player that you brought in to be a plug and play day one starter fails on you, turns out to do what Marvin Jones did,
right?
Then who's going to back him up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you have to be able to look and say, okay, we've got to recruit the best of the best as we can, right? And then we're going to have to go to the next level. I mean, building a roster is like building an organization, Jesse. Yep. You have your like your awesome leaders, your managers, your people managers. But above that, you need your visionary. You need the people to be able to create the products, create the thing you're going to sell, you know, think 10, 15 years out. Then you need your people who can manage the workflow and the execution of that vision. Then you need your people who can do the execution of the vision, right? Well, the same thing is with building a football roster. You need your all-stars. You need the ones who are going to be just kind of making the big plays. Then you need your role players, the players that are just going to do what they do really well. They're going to be consistent and they're going to show up. Then you need development. You need those players who are coming behind them. And in this era of college football, if you go out and get that five-star and he's a bust and you don't have somebody behind them that's coming up, you're in trouble, which is why the transfer portal has become such a huge part of this, that now your foundation is high school recruiting.
Right.
It has to be. The transfer portal is where, as you said, you're plugging in holes. You're creating good depth behind what you're building up development. One, the transfer portal, honestly, so far what we've seen, the transfer portal can't lead the way. No right. transfer portal team so far in this transfer era has been able to sniff a championship.
Yeah.
You have to have high school recruiting with transfer portal supplementation.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, it's funny, when you were saying that, something just popped into my head. And this is going to sound funny, I promise. But guys, follow along here, because I think I just hit on something here. So I think the greatest example of this right now is really to relate to a childhood nursery rhyme, and that is the three little pigs.
Okay.
So if you think about it, the three houses were built out of straw, sticks, and bricks, right? Mm. And say the national championship is the big bad wolf. Well, when he comes knocking and you've built your program out of straw, which is the transfer portal, transfers only, that you have a house, but it can get blown over quick.
That's
right?
That's right. I like it.
Where the house of sticks is maybe you've recruited pretty well, but you've also added in some transfer portal heavy pieces that, yeah, okay, it's going to be better than the straw house, but it's not going to be the house made of bricks, which is your Georgias, your Alabamas, your Ohio States that have recruited at that top 5, top 10 level.
That's right.
for years. So they built a solid foundation.
That's right.
Yeah, you have a house with straw and sticks, but is it going to last year in and year out when that big bad wolf comes knocking?
That's right.
Like a house of bricks. And again, I don't know where that just came from. It just popped into my mind, but I thought it sounded
I love it.
I thought it sounded like a pretty good example. So I think that's where you're at. And really, I think in the early point, you know, Florida State had kind of built a house of straw. And that's now, right. Then we saw there for the 2023 season, you've had the house of sticks.
Yeah.
But when things happened in 2024, you didn't have that brick foundation to support you. And so that's when right. you missed on those transfers, you didn't have enough pieces, enough bricks in the foundation that's to right. back that up and make sure your house didn't collapse. And boy, did it ever collapse.
Oh, it collapsed quickly.
Right. And so I think that's why it's great to use the portal. And we're going to talk about that more in a second. But you have to build your foundation, like you said, out of bricks.
That's
so
right.
Let's talk about a more recent example. And that is the 12-team playoff that happened last year. Now, I have the teams listed out one by one here on this slide here. And so we're going to start with looking at a couple of different data points here. And I'm not going to bore you guys with a ton of numbers here, but we have the team name. We have your four-year high school average ranking, which we talked about before. You have your two-year transfer classes leading up to when you made your run because, you know, the portal is a big factor. And some of these, you get 2 years out of these guys, right? And so then you also have your strength of schedule, because that is another big aspect that I'm going to talk about here in just a second, and then your overall talent ranking. And so realistically, you can see some of these teams here that look like they belong. They look like they built their house out of bricks. You have a Georgia here, four-year high school average, third. Your two-year transfer ranks, 56th and 14th. Now, Georgia doesn't need the portal, but you can see with that 14th ranked class, they have actually started to accent their roster with a little bit of portal players, like you were talking about before. Their strength of schedule was first, according to ESPN. The second number that I have here is your strength of schedule after week 14, because you're going to get a strength of schedule bump for going through the playoffs. So this kind of shows you your road to get into the playoffs. It was still top 10. So this is the second most talented roster in the country. Now, of course, they had a backup quarterback in the playoff, but they have a house of bricks. You could say the same thing for Notre Dame. High school average is 8. They had bricks and sticks in here because they had a two-year transfer class of number 9 and number 2. So back-to-back top 10 transfer classes on top of a top 10 four-year average. That team was built to win a championship. They just fell short of that. Their strength of schedule was not super hard. Top 20 there. And talent was 6. So they had everything to compete for a championship. You also have a team like Ohio State. Top 5 average. They had a top 10 portal class the year before, or the year they made the run, and a strong strength of schedule. Third in talent. They won the national championship. Clemson is another program that, while yes, they have fallen down a little bit, they've still built a house of bricks. Four-year average is still top 10. Two-year transfer ranking, I have listed here as LOL, because we know Dabo doesn't use the portal.
I love it.
Even though they've started, he's come around a little bit there. But their strength of schedule was relatively low on this list. It was 28th. So they were able to take the talent that they had and run through a schedule that wasn't as talented as they were. So they didn't have the most talent in the playoffs, but they had a talent advantage over their schedule. Texas is another one here. Four-year average, 7th. Two-year portal average. They did sign a top 5 class this year when they went on their run. So that helped as well. So again, this is accenting your roster. Strength of schedule was 6. They had a hard schedule. They made it through because they had a house of bricks.
That's right.
Notre Dame, the same way. 9th. Now, they don't really use the portal a whole lot here.
Right.
None of their classes, 38th and 40th. So nothing really there. But they had a top 10 most talented roster. Penn State is kind of that fringe sticks and bricks, right? Because they had a four-year average of 14. They didn't have a top 50, even top 50 portal class. Their strength of schedule was 10th, so they had a hard schedule, which, you know, they lost some of the tougher games that they played, and their talent was 11th. So they were kind of fringe. And then you have the stick houses, right? You have, you know, Tennessee is pretty close there. Four-year average was 16. They're kind of in that Penn State neighborhood. Four-year average of 16. They had a couple decent top, you know, middle 30 classes there in the portal. Strength of schedule was 16. Talent was 17. But then you talk about the other ones here. Boise State, Arizona State, SMU, and Indiana. These were the ones that were kind of the house of sticks. Now, you see what happened whenever they made the playoffs. Those house of sticks got blown down. you know, Indiana, when you look at their recruiting average here over 4 years, was 53rd. Yeah. So that was nowhere in the neighborhood of the brick houses.
Yeah.
They were a portal built team, the number 19 class in 23 and the number 28 portal class in 24. So they built that program. I think they took like 50 something transfers over those 2 years, but they had that strength of schedule that was pretty weak, 35th. You know, they didn't play any really good teams in the Big Ten. And when they did, they lost. Outside of maybe you could argue Michigan there. SMU, four-year average, 78th, but they had the number 13 transfer class and number 32 transfer class the last 2 years. So another portal-built team.
Right.
But the strength of schedule is 41st. So again, pretty weak there as well. Boise State, they're a G5 program that got in on the AQ bid. So right. You don't expect them to be running with the big dogs. Right. 65 average, not really great in the portal there, but they had the easiest path to get there by playing G5 teams. Now, I will say shout out to Kenny Dillingham because I tried to poke holes all in every single one of these teams. Four-year average was only 63rd. They did add through the portal here with the 17th and 30th ranked class 2 years before they made their run. They did have a pretty easy strength of schedule here at 39th and the 30th most talented roster. But, you know, when they got in the playoffs, they competed with Texas. They did not get their house blown off the frame. But in everything that I just said, Michael, the main takeaway here is the team with the higher ranked high school recruiting average won every single game in the playoffs and the national title, with the exception of Georgia, who had to use a backup quarterback in the playoffs. So, you know, maybe if they had had Carson Beck starting for them, maybe they don't lose that game.
Right. Right.
But that's the big takeaway, man. You look at all these numbers that we just had up on the screen. And I don't want to read every one of them because that would get drone on. But all these numbers, it's almost like, man, I think I may have found a new sports betting thing here for next year, right?
Right.
You just bet on the team that has had the higher ranked recruiting average, because in every single instance in the playoffs last year, minus Georgia with the backup quarterback, that is the team that came out on top.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. It's not like there aren't upsets in college football. Of course, there are upsets. But the data shows, the computer simulation, if you were to put this data into the computer simulation and have those numbers compete against each other of how many times, who would win, inevitably the computer simulation is going to favor the higher ranked program, the more resourced program. You saw that in college football playoff. You saw that the higher ranked high school recruiting pool had a better chance at winning. Why? Because you're playing with more talented players. Now, don't get us wrong. Coaching matters. Evaluation matters. Development matters. NIL matters. Facilities matter. All those things matter. But they don't matter more than having the kinds of players that can compete on the field and win you championships. You got to have coaches to coach them. You got to have money to pay them. You got to have facilities to help them develop, right? All those things, but you got to get them first. It's very important. The transfer portal matters in this case. Evaluating the transfer portal and getting the right kind of transfer portal player to fill a specific hole, getting the right kind of transfer portal player to fill specific depth issues. Yes, that matters too. But at the basis of this, again, going back to what I said earlier, is can you win your fair share of recruiting battles? And can you evaluate really well those battles that you are winning?
Oh, exactly. And I think a great example to tie it back to Florida State is, like, you look at Adam Fuller and this defense. You know, when they had a defense full of NFL draft picks, they were able to produce top 20 defenses.
Exactly.
And they weren't bad when they didn't have the talent. But again, man, it's still the Jimmies and the Joes. Like you said, the X's and the O's are important because you have to take advantage of the talent that you have hand, Texas A&M.
Yep.
But you also have to be able to have those dudes, because at the end of the day, you know what I mean? Like, I could have all the heart in the world. I could have $10 million training facility and all this stuff. If I get in the ring with prime Mike Tyson, Michael, I'm going to be drooling on the mat within 10 seconds because
that's right.
I don't know if Jimmy or Joe is the good one, but either way, I'm the Jimmy and he's the Joe. And that's just right. That's the way it works. And so
Well, and to steal a line from our favorite former Florida State football coach, the helmet don't make the player makes the helmet, you know?
Exactly. Right, exactly. And I think to tie it back to Florida State too is really like Florida State should be recruiting at that top 10 level because you have a geographical advantage to start with by being in the most talent-rich state in the country in Florida, and you have a logo that carries weight. Now, we'll talk more about Florida State here in just a second. But a couple of the takeaways to wrap up that part of the show that I want to talk about here is when I combed through all this data and I saw all these things, what were my main points of takeaway here? And I think that goes back to the first thing that Michael said. Takeaway number one is talent doesn't always equal success. Right. You can have all the talent in the world. Oregon has all the talent in the world, still never won a national championship ever.
That's right.
You can have Texas A&M, for example, all the money, all the talent, not all the wins. And I think that's a Miami too. That's a big thing there. I think when you see the recruiting, the way these teams are built, talking about building your house out of bricks, not sticks or straw, high school recruiting is the bricks. Point blank, period. The portal can be some thick sticks, right? Yeah. They're still not the bricks. And I do think you could see a shift in the future with the portal becoming more prevalent, more quality pieces going to other teams from these teams that have recruited at a high level. So that may factor out. But right now, high school is still king.
That's right.
But like you said, man, the portal is still a factor, right?
Yep.
Indiana, Arizona State, SMU, all had significantly higher ranked portal classes than high school classes in the 2 years prior to their run, which gave a boost to their talent ranking. And they probably do not make that run if it wasn't for the portal. Florida State does not make their run without the portal. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But again, you have a thinner margin of error if things go bad.
Right.
Whereas you see, you know, Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, they all had a top 10 transfer class the year of their run. Even UGA, like we mentioned, had that top 15 class. So even the big boys are starting to use that portal more often. I mean, the portal, if anything tells you how much of a factor the portal can be, like you said, at not building your roster, but plugging holes and getting key players at key positions. Six of the 12 teams in the playoffs last year had a transfer quarterback starting in the playoffs. Three of the final four teams had a quarterback that was a transfer, and both of the quarterbacks in the championship game were transfers.
That's right.
The portal's a factor. We can no longer deny this. It just, you have to build based on high school recruiting. I think one of the other takeaways here is the comments that I made about strength of schedule.
Yeah.
Because to me, that is kind of your path around the first two factors, right? That's like putting a fence up to where the big bad wolf can never even get close to your house, right? Because you look at, again, the teams that didn't look like they belonged, Indiana, Arizona State, Boise State, SMU, they all had a pretty weak strength of schedule rating when you look compared to the other teams that did look like they belong. Now, Clemson's wasn't great, but they kind of skated in last moment on the automatic qualifier bid. And I think what's important when you look at Indiana, talking about the strength of schedule, the only teams they played that had double-digit wins, Ohio State, Notre Dame, they lost.
Yep.
SMU, the only teams they played that had double-digit wins, BYU, Clemson, Penn State, they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Boise State played two Power Four teams, not counting Washington State and Oregon because they're not Power Four anymore. They lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so you either need to build your house of bricks or you need to have a strength of schedule that allows you to get by without it. But it's like we've always talked about, man, when with Florida State's recruiting struggles. Sure, you can sneak up and win the ACC, but those juggernauts are still waiting for you in the playoffs.
That's right.
And that's why we saw SMU get blown out. That's why we saw Indiana get blown out in the playoffs. You know, Boise State the same way. You know, another takeaway for me here was these X-factor power players, that's a big part of changing the outcome of a team, right? Without Genty, Boise State's not making them playoffs, without a fact. Scataboo, without him, Arizona State, probably not making the playoffs.
Correct.
Most of you saw Will Howard's combine tape. Jeremiah Smith probably just made that man look a lot better. You know, even to talk about a competitor here, without Cam Ward, Miami's probably a six-win team at best.
Oh, at best, yes. Yeah.
At best. And so that's one of the things. You can have that kind of generational talent, a LaMarcus Jackson, you know, a Cam Ward, that can really make you play above your level, right, of the talent that you've recruited. And then I think one of the other things here is talent is important, but where you put that talent is equally important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And really, it's, to me, it's talent in the trenches that separate the big boys from the not. You know, you think about UGA won two titles with a former walk-on quarterback. I mean, the one thing that always pops into my mind with them is the TCU game where Jalen Carter was, you know, carrying the TCU quarterback around like a baby doll. You know, that's where they got exposed. Yeah. Michigan with J.J. McCarthy, not a great quarterback. I think you were telling me, what, 140 yards in the national title game? They had great trenches. Notre Dame, the same way. Riley Leonard, not a great quarterback, not a great passer anyway.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the last one here, I think, is really with Clemson. One of the reasons that we've seen them stay as a top-tier program, even though they've not had the success that they've had in the past, is because they consistently have one of the top two offensive and defensive line units in the ACC.
Right.
So, you know, you might see a Sam Hartman at Wake Forest, or some of these guys that maybe they're a better quarterback than what Clemson has, but they're getting owned in the trenches.
Right.
And so that's why they can consistently be one of the best teams in the ACC. I mean, you think about when Florida State in 2023, that D-line was nasty.
Nasty.
Oof. That's one of the reasons they were so good. But this goes back to my trouble in the trenches episode that I did. Yeah. I think that is also why Florida State has struggled to be consistently good, because the offensive line is really hit or miss.
I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah.
The recruiting has not been there, or the development anyway. It's not been great. And then, of course, you know, the last thing I'll throw back to you, but the last thing here is the external factors that we mentioned, right? You can't say it without saying it. Michigan cheated. Ohio State bought their success. They had a $20, $30 million roster. They went out and bought these pieces to have success. Hey, they beat some teams that probably spent more than they did. Yeah. So they used that. They got the most out of their money, but, you know, they still paid for it. You know, Florida State got cheated, and then Lord knows what happened in 2024. That's, you know, again, that goes back to getting the most out of the talent that you have. And of course, Bama had a loaded roster, but they lost the greatest coach of all time. And so they had a reset the year. So that's really my main takeaways of looking at all this data, man. You have got to have a couple of key factors. Like, if you want to step back and look at your team and ask, are we going to be a championship contender in 2025? How have you recruited over the last 4 years? What have you done in the portal, and what is your strength of schedule looking like? And then how confident are you in your coaching staff to get the most out of the talent that you have? And if you can't green light at least 4 out of those 5 questions, you're probably not looking at making a playoff run.
Right. Yeah. And I hate to compare ours to scum you, but I'm going to use it, because remember when Butch Davis was leading Miami, they were getting every single 5-star player under the earth. They had a iron dome around Miami recruiting. You weren't getting into South Florida and getting those kids. And they were winning. They were dominating, right? Florida State started getting in the late 80s, started getting those kids to come to Florida State. They were dominating and winning. Well, then when all the other schools around the country started realizing, oh, well, South Florida is where it is. South Florida's got to get that. We got to get in the state of Florida, right? You started seeing these other programs start dominating. I'm saying that to say this. When Miami stopped being able to get the best of the best in their own backyard, they started going through 20 years of irrelevancy.
Yep.
If Florida State does not start getting the best of the best in its own backyard, first and foremost, we're going to end up like Miami of 20 years of irrelevancy, where we might have 1 to 2 good years in a 10-year time frame where we might peek our head out saying, hey, we're still here. Don't forget about us. And then we get made fun of like we do with Miami. And we don't want to be – that's not the kind of program we want to be. So Mike Norvell and this coaching staff have to get dead serious. Not serious, not concerned, dead serious, and get relentless in recruiting high school kids. And not just any old high school kids. Great if you find a diamond in a rough 3-star. Great if you find a really high 4-star. Absolutely. You need to go get these day one game changers, especially in the trenches. That's where you got to start, right? Because I think if you have an elite offensive line, an elite defensive line, everything after that is icing on the cake. You could have a middle of the pack quarterback and some middle of the pack wide receivers and some middle of the pack running backs. But if your offensive line is literally filled with day one or day two draft picks, you're going to run the ball and throw the ball how you want, because that right. defensive line is going to have to start blitzing and all the things just to try to get you off your schedule. If you can do that, if you have a great defensive line, because you they're littered with NFL draft picks, doesn't matter what you got on the back end, because the quarterback ain't going to have time. He's going to be running for his life, right? We saw that with Jared Verse and Braden Fisk, and when Patrick Peyton had Jared Verse and Braden Fisk,
right,
you saw
right.
how dominant that defensive line was, that it didn't matter what they were doing in the secondary or the linebacker play. Louisville couldn't, they didn't have a second to even think about what play they wanted to run because Jared Verse was sitting in their laps, right?
Right.
That's what happens when you go after. So to me, the biggest takeaway is we've got to shut down the state of Florida again. We can't be having Alabamas and Clemsons and Georgias and Ohio States and all those guys coming in and taking players right in our backyard. We got to put a fence up and say, no, 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 no. This is Florida State. God forsaken, this is Miami. This is Florida. You're not taking our players anymore. We've got to start there with the foundation and have great evaluation. That was my biggest takeaway. That's why I sent you the graph.
Yeah, no, and I agree, because you could, like we said, I mean, you hate to talk about the rivals, but you could even mention that for Florida and Miami as well, because you've seen where those three programs used to have a fence around that state, and now you're seeing these kids leave and going to Clemson, going to Alabama, you know, Jeremiah Smith, right out of your state, and now is the best wide receiver in college football. Like, you have to be able to corner that market, and that comes from being success on the field, by taking recruiting and making it a priority, which is something that we maybe felt like they didn't before, And you know, the mediocre talk that you mentioned is like, it's a tough conversation to have, but it's the truth. I mean, having those pieces, being dominant in the trenches, is how you go into the Swamp and win with Tate Rodemaker.
That's right.
That's how you go into the ACC Championship and win with Brock Glenn in his very first start ever.
Right.
Because you were dominant in the trenches. Well, at least on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, it might be a tough conversation to have, but if you want to bring it home to Florida State, we'll check out the next slide that I made. This is a graph here of Florida State's four-year average high school recruiting rank versus the number of wins. Now, the garnet bars here are your number of wins. The gold bars are your four-year average class rank. And then I added some black bars after 2022 when the recruiting services started ranking portal classes, because they weren't ranked early on when the portal first opened in 2018. So I added them to late because, again, like we said, it is a factor. Right. But you can see where the garnet bars were way up high on your win totals, which is what you wanted, and these gold bars were very short gold bar, which means you were recruiting these top five classes. Look, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, you had all these top five classes, and you were winning 10-plus games until, you know, of course, 2017. And then you look at the recruiting started – climbing and climbing and climbing, and not in a good way. took a nosedive. You see these go up and to the right on your ranking, and the wins take a nosedive. And so this is where you see, where you look at what Florida State has done over this 10-year period from 2014 to 2024. The recruiting has not been where it needs to be. And the wins, other than 2023, which is kind of an anomaly season, has not been where it needs to be. Now, again, like we said, Lord knows what happened in 2024. But you can see that right now, if you want to compete for a championship, then those gold bars are not where they need to be. And so you have to improve on this recruiting. So really, I think, what does this mean for Florida State when you look at that graph, when you look at that numbers? Because that's a punch in the gut, man. It is what it is. The numbers don't lie. Maybe you can do some better things, right? Norvell did take this, you know, for everything that 2024 wasn't, in 2023, they took kind of an undermanned roster.
That's right.
Of non-blue chips and things like that. And they did more with it than they should have. So I think you saw some positives there. But what I'm hoping for, to bring this all home, and the last thought that I have on this part of the show and tying it into Florida State, is we felt that with the first iteration of this Florida State staff, that outside of Patrick Surtain, and then, of course, you know, you had Alex Atkins, who could recruit but couldn't do anything with it, you needed to bring in a staff, even if from not on the field stuff, from a recruiting standpoint, that was more elite in recruiting. And that's something where you should have made these changes sooner than 2024, when things fell apart, sooner than when your house of straw got exposed. And so what I'm hoping is, by bringing in this new staff, by guys who have been at elite level programs, you know, or at least been good recruiters in the past, you need to kind of reset those gold and garnet bars, right? You need to bring those gold bars down to push those garnet bars up. That's just the way it has to work. And it has to rely on high school recruiting first and foremost, because as we've talked about, it is still the king of college football. And so one of the things, because, you know, people really had a lot of trepidation about Gus Malzahn being hired as your offensive coordinator. And we were joking before. I was like, you know, I even joked. I said, hey, man, if you were going to bring in an older, outdated offensive coordinator, maybe you should have just brought in Jimbo, because the man could recruit, right? He would do, if nothing else, he would stock your roster. And you still have Mike Norvell's offensive mind working together there as well. One of the things that I'm hoping that Gus can do, if for nothing else, he can still recruit too. And this is what I'm hoping that he can help with. So the next thing I'm going to throw up here is looking at what Gus Malzahn was able to do from a recruiting standpoint during his time at Auburn when he had a Power 5 program. Because I know UCF is in Orlando. That's great. But they're still not – they're still little brother in a way, right?
Correct.
Little. They're second cousin. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
They're on down the bloodline. But when you look at what he did at Auburn, and I know this success was a few years in the past, but it's as recently as 2020. You look at the classes that he signed from 2013 to 2020, 10th, 6th, 8th, 9th, 9th, 12th, 9th, and 7th. He had all but one class finished in the top 10. The man knows how to go into a living room and compete against a Nick Saban. He knows how to go into a living room and compete with these top-tier programs that he was recruiting against in the SEC. Even when you have the conversation at UCF, UCF was recruiting the best it had in a decade under Gus Malzahn while he was there. They, when he left, the year he left, the last year, was the 39th recruiting class, ranked recruiting class at UCF. That was like their best class maybe in history. I don't know. Looking at the classes like the 10 years before that, they only cracked the 50s one time, and he never had below 60. So you can see where the man can still recruit. And I think the breadcrumbs that make you feel confident going into the future is what this staff did from the time they got hired to signing day, right? They were able to come in here and really put together a solid class, considering the fact that it had already fallen apart.
Right.
You know, and then when you look over at Mike Norvell here, you have the 22nd, 23rd, 20th, I think 2023, I might have put a mistake there. I don't think we've had a top 10 class, or it might have been consensus because this was 247 ratings. But 9th, 12th, 19th, and 12th for 2026 currently there. So it's just not been where it needs to be when you look back at the conversation we had to set the stage. It needs to be top 10 more often than it's not, and it has not been since Mike Norvell has been here. Now, we know he came from Memphis. We know he didn't have ties in Florida. We knew that was going to be tough because he took over a dumpster fire when he got here.
Right.
But now that you're in year five now, and you've hired a staff that knows how to recruit, so I'm hoping Gus Malzahn can rub off on Mike Norvell and really get this thing turned around, because to be where you want to be, to compete for championships consistently, you've got to be signing those top 10 classes. And that's something that Gus Malzahn just has a history of doing. And so, you know, I'm hoping that these two together can equal some success, and it can also come in the form of recruiting, because, you know, this is something we were talking about before, where I think when you look at the end of this year, coming into 2025, most people want 8 wins to feel confident like this is going to work, right?
Right.
But if they go 7-5 and have a top 5 class in the fold, you're not going to fire them. You're not going to move on from them, because you can see that they are bringing in the bricks to build that future foundation. And so one of the main things I'm looking for, not only is progress on the field, but progress on the trail.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And to your point, Florida State has never had a top 10 recruiting class. In 2023, they were ranked 20th by 247 and 22nd by On3. And so, yeah, I mean, like the idea is this. I mean, it's been very clear is that when Florida State has gotten close enough to that top 10, the elite ranking, you've seen it translate into wins. It's clear as day. Better players, more often than not, and again, we've talked about the other factors that go into this, but better players, more often than not, can potentially have a higher opportunity to translate to dubs, to win, right? If you can get the better players, evaluate really well, develop them, pay them well, especially in this paradigm of college football,
right,
you have a better chance of winning more and more football games. Now, to go back to your analogy real quick of the straw house, the stick house, and the brick house, the straw house ain't going to get you anywhere. The stick house will get you some wins. It'll get you 9-3s. It'll get you 10-2s. It'll get you Miami's last season, right? It'll get you those things. But the brick house, elite players on top of great coaching and great resources, gets you in the ballpark of a championship, gets you in the field to compete for a championship. When SMU and Boise State and Indiana, with their somewhat straw, somewhat stick houses, got into that field just by nature of the rules, well, you saw what happened. They got exposed, right?
They got hit by some bricks.
They got hit by some bricks, right?
Yeah.
The Wolf didn't even have to blow. Somebody threw a brick at him and knocked him straight out, right? Like, it was done.
Yeah.
But when you saw teams that had a better brick facility, right, you saw that they were able to actually have success. And that's all we're asking. That's all we're saying Florida State needs to do. Florida State just needs to get, which we all know. I know we're stating the obvious. Get better players. Win your recruiting battles. Close off the state as best as you can from outsiders so that it's only you and Miami and Florida competing for those best players here in the state of Florida. Build that foundation. Look, I already think they have a really good coach. I mean, he's proven he can coach. Man, right. Didn't him forget. He went out and got two coordinators who have produced top offenses, top defenses. He's got the resourcing. Michael Alford and this administration are bending over backwards and leveraging the university's future to give you resources. I mean, I've seen pictures of the football-only facility. It's going to be gorgeous. It's going to be great. It's going to be huge. They got NIL. They got the house settlement now. They're going to get a high percentage of what that house settlement is. They got the battles in. They got people like you and me giving our hard-earned money to support them. They've got it all. You've got to go get these players now.
Yep, and that was a typo on my part, so thanks for the correction there.
No worries.
But yeah, I know. I think you're right. I mean, when you have this recruiting, which has always been really the one knock on Mike Norvell, even when you were 10-3 and 13-1 and you saw the recruiting, like, you still weren't bringing in a lot of the high-level recruits. You were still losing your top recruit year after year. That was always the one knock. And I think in no world should a 2-10 have ever happened, right? You had more talent than a lot of the teams you lost to. There's who knows? Maybe there'll be a 30-for-30 about that someday. But at the same time, if you recruited better, if he had signed a top 10 class coming off of, you know, the 10 win season, or even like a top 15, top 10 class, you know, you look, okay, well, you know, we started 0-4 in 2021, and then you saw the progress happen. If you had been an elite recruiter, something like that, well, okay, then maybe you don't need to bring in DJU at quarterback.
Right.
Maybe you don't have to roll out a couple of 3-star wide receivers that can't catch.
Right.
You know, maybe you don't have an offensive line that can't block because you have these guys who are waiting in the wings like you talked about. And so to me, yeah, I think to wrap this all up, man, I think you got to make an emphasis on recruiting, because when you're at a program like Florida State, even like you mentioned, Miami and Florida, I mean, look at what Mario's doing. He might not can coach his way out of a paper bag, but at the same time, they're recruiting even when they're not having success.
That's right.
So when Mike Norvell's having success and he's not meeting those, matching that on the recruiting trail, that's a problem, because at Florida State, in this state, with the geographical advantage that you have, and when you've had success, you got to follow that up with these top 10 recruiting classes. It's just not something that they've been able to do so far. So that's why I hope this new staff and a rejuvenated roster and all that stuff will help lead to success on the field, which will put you back where you need to be.
And let me just say this real quick, just to be very clear, we're very positive on this show.
Yeah.
But we're also very positively matter of fact. 7-5, 3-6, 5-7, 2-10, anything less than 10 wins is unacceptable here at Florida State.
Right.
And we're not going to lower the standard because you had two good seasons. We're not going to lower the standard, because if we lower the standard, we become the Miamis. We become the Nebraskas. We become the Tennessees, the Virginia Techs. No, we're not. You've got to win. And by winning, you've got to recruit well.
I think that's a great point, because both of us are as positive as can be. I don't think either one of us wanted Mike Norvell fired, even though there were times where, you know, I might have thought about it last year, but I think he can turn this thing around. I think they can find success on the field. But like you said, man, 10 wins is not the standard. Winning, competing for championships is the standard here.
Yep.
And the thing is, regardless of who's the head coach, how you get there is what we just laid out in this episode with top 10, top five classes more often than not. And that is not something. I think he's a great coach. I think he's been able to take some teams in 22 and 23 and overachieve, punch above his weight class. The recruiting shows you why this – right now we're a house of sticks. And so it's just from 1 year to the next, you just don't know what you're going to get until you recruit like a Georgia, like an Alabama, like an Ohio State. Now, you still have the ACC patch on. That's going to be a little bit of a hindrance too. Miami signed a top five class. You know, Clemson signed a lot of top classes. The Big Ten didn't really matter until Ohio State and Michigan won a national title because they didn't win one in 10, you know, in almost 10 years. So, yes, that might be a hindrance, but you have a geographical advantage that a lot of programs don't. So you need to take advantage of that and get out of the ACC at some point, which is coming. But you need to be able to go and win on the trail because that equals success on the field.
That's right.
So the next thing we want to talk about here, Michael, is shoot your shot, man. Babe Ruth, call it out, right? Point your home run out. Can Florida State have the best offense in the country? Well, I'm not going to put my money on it. But the reason I say this is Gunnar Hansen, transfer offensive tackle from Vanderbilt, recently made a comment. And I'm going to let you provide further context on it because you saw the whole transcript and I just saw the clip where he said basically in a sense that, you know, they're working with Gus Malzahn. They're preaching every day that they're going to strive to do their best to be the best offense in the country next season. And you can probably imagine how the comments and the retweets went on social media. My guy got absolutely flamed for saying that. Now, for me, I don't take an opposition with it. I think it's perfectly okay, right? I get it. It's one of those situations where it's like, read the room after 2024. You literally had the 131st ranked offense at 15.4 points per game. And to be first, you got to get over 40 points a game. You got a long way. You want to talk about climb? That's a big old climb. So you got to get yourself there. But man, the reason I don't take offense to this, and I think it's unlikely they probably have the best offense in college football. I mean, you still have to play Bama and Clemson this year, who have great defenses, but you also get Kent State and East Texas A&M. So you might need to put 100 up on them to be able to do it. But what is he supposed to say?
That's right.
Is he supposed to come in and say, well, we're out here working hard to have the okayest offense? You know, well, as long as we're top 50, you know, that's all we really want this year. No, man, this is the kind of attitude that I want coming into this program. This is the kind of guys that I want to lead this team. Florida State lacked leadership last year. They lacked having these alpha dogs who were confident in themselves. And so, to me, I'm okay with having this type of mentality. Man, you just got to back it up on the field because I might be a prove it with your play type of guy, but this team needs that dog mentality. They need that, like, I don't care what happened last year. And for Gunnar Hansen, personally, he was not part of this offense last year. So why does he care what they did or didn't do last year? The offensive coordinator that he's talking about wasn't calling the plays last year.
That's right.
The quarterback that he's protecting wasn't throwing the ball last year.
That's right.
Four of the five offensive line starters, they weren't part of this offense last year. So they don't care what happened last year. So I like the fact that he's confident in himself. He's confident in his coaches and he's confident in his teammates because frankly, man, at this level, I don't need scared. I need confidence. Look at Jared Verse.
That's right.
That man will look you in your eyes and tell you, I'm about to whip your butt. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you just think like at Vanderbilt, I'm sure nobody told him that they were going to go beat Alabama.
Correct.
And they did. So for me, man, you know, I just thought this was a fun segment to talk about because, you know, when you finish 131st in total or in scoring offense last year, and then you talk about having the best offense in college football, holy cow, you better strap up because you know the comments are coming for you. But I love the new attitude, man. I love this mentality. And, you know, I know that people will take trepidation with Gus Malzahn and what Mike Norvell put on the field last year, but I know it's been a long time removed, but last time these two worked together at Tulsa, they had some of the most prolific offenses in the country, and you brought in some good pieces. So, man, I'm here for this new type of mentality that Florida State players are bringing to the table.
Listen, I love the BTBs, okay? And BTB stands for belt to butt. I can't say the other word.
Yeah.
Belt to butt, okay? I love that attitude. You got to have that kind of attitude. You're going to play Division I Power 4 football. Now, this isn't to say that you need to come in thinking you're world beaters. Let's be real. This offense was second to last in the country, okay?
Yeah.
But like you said, Jesse, they weren't here. most of these guys weren't a part of this. And so, like you said, is he supposed to come in and be like, actually, we're just hoping to get better than second to last in the country? If we're like eighth to last in the country, that'll be great. That'd be a great improvement. No. And also, let's just give the man a little bit of benefit of the doubt and actually read the entire quote. That's what always bothers me is people take sound bites and they put it out there and then they want to trash the guy. The guy said this, and I quote, Coach Malzahn preaches every day we're going to be the best offense in college football, Hansen said. And just breaking stuff up every day. We're going to be the best at it. Just going scheme by scheme, detail by detail. So we're going to be the best offense in college football this year. That's the mission. Okay. Now, could he have said maybe we're going to try? That might have been better. Sure.
Right.
But the object is, hey, every day we're coming out to practice. Coach Malzahn is feeding confidence in us. He's telling us we're going to be the best offense in the country this year. That's building confidence. Whether or not we end up being the best offense in the country is neither here or there. It's the confidence of believing we could be the best offense in the country this year. So, yeah, I'm going to run through my drills harder. Yeah, I'm going to run through my fundamentals harder. Yeah, I'm going to block harder. Yeah, I'm going to really study the scheme better because I'm now being told I have the ability to be a part of one of the best offenses in the country this year. Absolutely. Speak your truth, man. Speak confidence.
Right. I agree. And there's a difference between confidence and arrogance. He exactly. wasn't like, oh, we're going to be the best offense in the country. They're trying to, that's what their goal is. That's what they want. The standard is the standard. We say that right. all the time at Florida State. And so, you know, you work towards that, man. And, you know, again, like, it's just the new mentality that I like, even from Gus Malzahn, you know, coming in and saying, we're going to be the best and empowering your players.
That's right.
And believing in your teammates. Because, you know, again, man, like, you look back to last year where, maybe this wasn't a great analogy, but, you know, DJU was kind of a limp noodle as far as a leader. Like, he just didn't, a whole lot of nothing. Just
yes.
didn't really kind of motivate you one way or That's the other. Right. Just kind of emotionless on the sideline. You know, you didn't have guys that had confidence. They didn't respond well to adversity. Look, you're bringing in guys here with a Gunnar Hansen who has went toe-to-toe and beat Alabama.
Right.
You're talking about Micah Pettis, an offensive lineman who beat Georgia.
That's right.
You're talking about Squirrel White, who also, you know, came in here and beat Alabama. You got guys who have been on the biggest stages and beat these teams. They know what they're capable of. They know what it takes to get there. And like you said, man, they're not going to come in and just be like, maybe we can go 4-8. That'd be better than 2-10. No, man, I want the confidence for these guys to come in here and have the belief that last year was last year, and it's dead, it's buried, and it's gone, and we're going to turn and flip the script for this year, and we're confident in what we have. You know, James Williams said something about the talent that they have here versus Nebraska. No disrespect to Nebraska, but he was confident in that.
That's right.
And so, man, I love it. That's what I want. I want dudes on this roster who aren't scared to call their shot. That's what I want.
That's right.
And so the last thing here to round out this episode, we do have a little bit of other sport news to talk about. We spent a lot of time talking about football. Of course, you know, again, we kind of had to find some, dig up some topics to talk about with football, but there are other sports going on right now that we need to touch on for a few quick minutes here. And first off, we'll start with baseball. Last non-conference weekend series anyway, because you do have a series against Florida. It's just stretched out in a midweek thing there, but last one against Lipscomb.
Yep.
So Lipscomb. Weird name. Not a great team. They're 4-8. But you know, Florida State, man, they had five games this week, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But they've had some injuries. They've been replacing some guys with some young guys. Been playing some young players in the lineup there. They didn't play well against Bethune-Cookman.
That's right.
Just point blank period. They just did not. They had some pitching issues. They really didn't get the bats going there, and they had a couple of uncharacteristic fielding mistakes. So if you're going to get that out, now's a good time to do it because the schedule's about to get real. Once you hit that ACC play, you have Florida coming up in a midweek next week, but they get the job done and they improved to 13-0. I think they're one of six or seven teams left in the country that are still undefeated. I do think it shows, man, again, like this is kind of, if you want to equate this to football, Link has built a roster here to where you can have an off game and still go out and get a win. So I think that's important. But yeah, coming up against Lipscomb, hopefully they can get this series win, hopefully a series sweep and stay undefeated as they go into that next beginning ACC conference play, as well as that midweek against Florida. But overall, man, I think when my thoughts on baseball after watching kind of the first part of the series unfold is, first off, you're going to be able to compete with anybody because of that weekend pitching rotation. I mean,
that's right.
When Jamie Arnold has the worst ERA, and this is not a knock on Jamie Arnold because I still think it's like a 1.3 ERA. When he has the worst ERA of all your weekend starters, you're in a pretty daggone good spot.
Yeah.
I mean, Joey Vellini was lights out against Georgetown. And Georgetown put up a fight, but he had 11 strikeouts against the Hoyas there. So, you're doing great. I think the one thing they got to find, too, is between their middle relievers and their closers, you got some guys that have really good days and some guys that have off days. It's just kind of inconsistent right now. But one thing that I do like is Link has a very short leash this year. If a guy starts struggling, they don't let him work through it. They pull him and they go to somebody else because you never know who's going to have the night, the off night or the big night. I think the lineup is kind of the same way. You've had some guys stepping up every week. You know, you've seen Faroe struggled a little bit there in that series or in that game against Bethune-Cookman there. But then you have guys like Miles Bailey, who is tearing the ever-loving cover off the baseball.
Gosh, yeah.
I think he hit Doak with a baseball. Like he put that thing in Lake City. I mean, that kid, he's a beast. I mean, he's huge. He's a big boy, first off. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he can play offensive line or something like that, but we could use him. And then, you know, shout
Isn't
out
to he a freshman?
True freshman.
I mean, this kid
is going to be special. And then, of course, another true freshman, man. BJ Gibson man, he's got speed on the base path. His bat is coming alive. I hope he gets more time on the field in football because I think he can be special there too. We saw some flashes of that, his future might be in baseball because the kid is very talented. But you know, Max Williams is coming alive. You're just right now. I think you're trying to find consistency as you get into that ACC play. But last one of the weekend here, our last non-conference series of the season here. So hopefully they can get a sweep and get some of these things, get that bad game out of your system and get ready for the tougher part of your schedule. Because man, this team's got a lot of talent and a ton of potential.
Yeah,
and I think they can make a deep run in Omaha if everything starts firing at the right time.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Man, I think Link has got those boys going. You know, they're a bit banged up as they talked about, but man, like you said, if you could work out kind of all the crustiness of the team, some of the rotations of, you know, how they're going to, you know, what reliever they're going to bring in where, how short does he need to have that leash? How long he needs to have that leash? You know, the bullpen is always, it's always the great support or the Achilles heel of the baseball
team. The
hero or the goat. Exactly. And so I know he's going to be working through that. I also heard a little bit of scuttlebutt that potentially Cam Leiter might return at some point. Maybe. Somewhere towards the end of the season. So that could also be a boost if that ever ends up happening. But I'm sure they won't count on that as well. And so we'll really get to see our true makeup of who Florida State baseball is as we go into ACC play. Now we're going to get to really see how well this roster is gelling and how well that talent is going to come across.
Yeah. Oh, totally agree. And once they start getting the starting pitchers worked up to that 90-100 pitch count level there, then you won't have to rely as much on that bullpen. But you do sometimes worry, you know, that you're going to lose a lead in the process of figuring things out. But now, if they get Cam Leiter back, this pitching staff is going to be almost unhittable. I mean, it's going to be legitimate. So excited to see what they do this weekend there against Lipscomb. And then, obviously, again, that big one next week against Florida, that midweek battle there before they start ACC play. Now, the last thing we're going to talk about here, I'm just going to drop the headline and I'm going to kick it to you because you know a heck of a lot more about basketball to me. But obviously, we know Florida State is going to be moving on from Leonard Hamilton this year. This actually popped up right before we jumped on, so this wasn't even originally going to be part of the show. So kind of breaking news here, what it's looking like. Now, Florida State has struggled here down the stretch. Obviously, you know, they lost at UVA. They got hammered by Duke. You were hoping they could go out on top. You know, this is kind of showing why we're making a change here, obviously. But we've had some names that we've been looking at. Sam Cassell, of course, FSU great there, as well as Luke Laux. These are the two names that have been at the top of the list. Sam Cassell has really been the name that's been rumored, but now it is being reported by some major outlets that while negotiations are still going on, Luke Laux is going to be the guy. Currently an assistant with the Sacramento Kings, I believe, was spotted in Michael Alford's suite there at one of the basketball games. You know, and unless he was coming to tell Leonard, congratulations on a great career, that might have been an informal interview. So it sounds like he's going to be the guy, man. And I think it's exciting because he's young. He can relate to some players. Now, he hasn't been a college coach, so we don't know how the recruiting front is going to go.
Right.
But I think you can bring some NBA prowess here. You can bring the young relatability. I think he's only in his 30s. Yeah. You can bring that young relatability here, and you're going to have to build a staff around him. And, you know, like we were talking about before the show, I'm going to let you get into this, but you're going to ask a guy to come into a football school in a basketball conference and, right. and kind of work magic. So, right. you know, you're going to get into some of the resources and stuff there, but sounds like Luke Laux is going to be the hire for FSU basketball after Leonard Hamilton steps down after the season.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you know, shout out to Leonard Hamilton, 23 right. years, incredible career, and just a high integrity man. Thank you for what you've done for Florida State basketball. Even he would admit the last couple years is not up to the standard that he would have had for Florida State. And so it's imperative that they get this hire right, because as right. just to tag it a little bit to football, we've seen with this ACC settlement that the success initiative is going to be also partially dependent upon the success of the basketball team on the basketball court. Right. So it's going to be important for Florida State to get this right. If I'm Mike Norvell, I'm going to Michael Alford and being like, are you sure? Because we need help, right?
Yeah.
And so, like you said, Luke Laux is projected to be the next coach at Florida State. Now, some of the talk out there is that they're looking at a salary around $2 million to a little bit, somewhere around there. You told me Leonard Hamilton was making $2.5 million. So it makes sense that Luke Laux might make just a little bit less than Leonard Hamilton. The issue I find is that right now they're looking at a assistant salary pool of about $1.5 million. And Luke Laux, because he has no head coaching experience in college, because he has no recruiting experience, well, he has no head coaching experience, period. He has no head coaching experience in college. He has no recruiting experience in college. He's going to have to go out and find some really good experienced assistants, especially ones with recruiting prowess to be able to get into those top high school players to come and try to convince them to play for Florida State, or as well as getting into the transfer portal and evaluating that. More so than college football or any other sport, college basketball has benefited greatly by the transfer portal. You look at the last two national champions, which were won by one school, University of UConn. They had transfer portal players dominate their roster in order to win. And so Florida State can actually turn their program on a dime, literally like that overnight, if they can go out and get the right kinds of assistants who have the right kind of connections. They also, some of the other scuttlebutt out there is that the NIL figure, this is not with the Battles In or the Rising Spear, but it's supposed to be somewhere with the House Amendment around $1.3 million that's going to potentially go towards men's basketball, which in this day of college basketball, that is not a lot. That is not a lot. It's just not. You're not going to be able to attract the best players, whether high school or the transfer portal. So I'm curious to see how Luke Laux is going to try to work through that. If they have a great fundraising strategy with the Rising Spear or the Battles End, whichever entity partners with men's basketball there. But that's the details that are kind of out there right now. Again, negotiations are still ongoing, but it's looking like Luke Laux is going to be the next head coach at Florida State.
Yeah, I think what those numbers tell you is that you can tell we're a football school and a basketball conference. Like,
absolutely.
The majority of the resources are going to go to the football program. But like you said, man, I mean, the success initiative and the brand initiative
right.
are partially tied to men's basketball. You know, so you want it to be good. I mean, look how empty the Tucker Center is right. game after game. So you need someone to create excitement within the program to where if those numbers don't match up, you can get guys who are going to want to, or your donors, whoever they are, to really kind of make up that gap in NIL. And so I do like that it is a former Seminole. I mean, I think that is going to, you're going to have someone who cares about this program, who is emotionally invested in this program. I mean, is going to want to see them succeed at all costs and can maybe speak to those donors from a level of care and familiarity with the program. But that seems to be the name. So, I mean, I was excited about either one, Cassell or Luke Laux, but looks like Laux is going to be the guy. So it's going to be a new era for FSU basketball after 23 years. Like we said, I mean, shout out to Leonard Hamilton for really keeping this program 90% of the years respectable as a football, you know, basketball program at a football school in a basketball conference.
Right.
So, you know, he's done a great job, but it's time for a new era, and it looks like Luke Dox is going to be the guy. So that's going to be it for today's era for this episode. We're going to end it here. We appreciate you guys watching. Hopefully you enjoyed nerding out on this recruiting talk with us. Like we said, we went from I think I text Michael Thursday night. I said, man, I got nothing to talk about tomorrow. There is nothing to talk about, to filling over an hour. But, you know, that's just what we do. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Drop a like and subscribe if you like this content. We are pushing towards 2,000 subscribers. We are just, I think, about 50, a little over 50 away. So that would be great if we could hit that there. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans. Make sure you check out Roback and the gear that they offer. Save 20% with Coach Spear. Thank you guys for watching. We will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.
Go Noles, baby.